We have to start today's episode on a bit of a more somber note because a legend, James Earl Jones, passed away. And not only was he the voice of multiple generations, as he was Darth Vader and Mufasa, if you didn't know, he also graduated from the University of Michigan, and he is the voice of the Michigan football hype video that plays before every single game. It sends chills up your spine when you hear it. It's not a Michigan game without his voice kicking it off. James Earl Jones, rest in peace, you absolute legend.
I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. The best part of going to a game at the Big House before everything kicks off, arguably, is that hype video. And fans just go nuts when James Earl Jones puts on the headset and says, "This is the University of Michigan." And I didn't even think about this. What they're going to do this weekend against Arkansas State, like as far as like a tribute, is going to be absolutely electric. But so sad just because like, this legend, he's gone. But James Earl Jones, thank you for giving us a voice through our childhood and also our favorite sports team in the state of Michigan. You're a real one. You will be missed.
Pour one out for James Earl Jones today. But hey, if you love Big Ten football, you came to the right place. Welcome to Big Banter, everybody. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you are listening on Apple or Spotify. Hit that subscribe or that follow button. Helps us out a lot. And then follow us on Twitter at B1GBanterPod, on Instagram at B1GBanter. And Corey, say something nice to the people who are listening.
Hot people listen to Big Banter. And if you're listening, you know who you are. Thank you so much for listening to us every week. You give us a reason to record this thing, and it's a lot of fun for us, and we hope it's a lot of fun for you. So thanks. You guys are great.
I'm not going to lie. I haven't checked the subscriber numbers in a while, so I don't really know if anyone's listening, but I have a feeling we'd probably record this anyways. Just
why would you say that?
Because I genuinely don't know. I can't remember what the number was the last time I checked, and the last time I checked was probably it's been a long time. It's been a long time. I know Teague is out there listening, and that's bare minimum.
This is supposed to be a professional recording, and you're like, actually, we suck.
I have no idea if anyone listens to us every week, but it's fun for us, so we're going to keep doing it. Okay. Anyways, back on track. We got to talk about Big Ten football, and I have to say, it will not be as fun this week as it was last week. The Big Ten was 17-1 last week. I'm just going to say they weren't 17-1 this week. Probably a lot more lowlights than highlights, one of which we'll get to. What is Michigan's floor and ceiling now that we've seen them get demolished by one of the best teams in the country? But then one of the highlights, probably the biggest one this week, is Nebraska back. They put on a heck of a show, taking down Colorado in a classic rivalry game. So we will talk about Nebraska's future prospects this year. And then either on this episode or a second one this week, we'll still determine that TBD week three picks. So stick with us till the end. We might get to week three picks this episode. But we will start out with the game of the week where College Game Day was at, big noon kickoff, Josh Pate. It was Texas and Michigan. And Michigan just got their teeth kicked in by Texas, 31-12. And I think this game, for a lot of Michigan fans, me included, forced us to take our rose-colored glasses off. The last 3 years of Michigan football have been insanely elite. The most elite three-year stretch that the program's ever seen. And I think it probably tricked a lot of us, at least it tricked me into thinking that maybe they were a different kind of program now. This game reminded me, Michigan is a rebuilding program. They are not a reloading program. They are not like a Georgia or a Bama or an Ohio State where like big group of talented players leaves and then, well, they've got the freshmen or sophomores or whoever to backfill them because they've recruited that level. They just don't. They're a developmental program and that's fine. That works for them. But it took this game to remind me of that. And just to give you a couple numbers, Texas was 10 of 16 on third down. And that number was way higher or way more efficient in the first half. I believe it was like 8 of 10 at one point. They got whatever they wanted on third down. Even if it was third and long, Michigan couldn't get off the field. For the game, Texas averaged 4.5 yards per carry. And their offensive line, they stood tall against the pass rush. They pushed Michigan around in the run game. Texas seriously did whatever they wanted in this game. Forced 3 turnovers for Michigan as well. It was a blowout like I did not see coming.
Man, there's so much that you could take from this game. And yes, we need to put down our 2024 Rose Bowl colored glasses for this one. First and foremost, give credit to Texas. They looked poised. They looked experienced. They looked prepared. And Quinn Ewers was unbelievable. I mean, he was surgical, and he was doing just about anything that he wanted. And it wasn't even so much just like the touch passes and you know, finding the weak spots and zones. Like he was going through his progressions, and when he didn't force anything, and when there was nothing for him to throw at, he ran for a couple first downs as well, which that's just a sign of a veteran quarterback and something that you need if you're going to make a deep national title run. And even with Texas losing a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, they still had that senior leadership in Quinn Ewers, and they had his just game-changing ability. He was unbelievable. I was really disappointed with the Michigan defense. For the first time in a very long time, they looked unorganized and a little lost as well. I know that Wink Martindale was getting some heat on the Twitters, but, you know, who isn't going to get heat on the Twitters when what was unfolding was unfolding? And they couldn't get off the field. And that is a tough and tall task to ask, even for the best defense, to keep your team in there when they're on the field for 80% of a 60-minute game. They did some weird stuff. I remember seeing Mason Graham playing defensive end, which was a choice. And the Michigan didn't respond to like reverses or trick plays very well. They looked inexperienced from a somewhat experienced group. There's a lot that you could say, but I will say that everything that could go wrong did go wrong for Michigan. They couldn't move the ball down the field in the air. The running game was taken out instantly, so you couldn't build your offense about run first and pass second. And then you had a guy like Colston. The Colston Loveland fumble. And I'm not going to harp on him because by no means is that why Michigan lost the game. But once that happened at the end of the second half, you're like, there's no coming back from this one. So you kind of had your fate sealed at halftime, and everybody was talking about that as well. That was the worst loss that Michigan fans had experienced in 3 years. I mean, you can say Georgia. I mean, it felt like Georgia just being overmatched and out-talented, which stinks. What are you going to do? It's the response that's going to matter for this Michigan team. Are you going to come out against an inferior Arkansas State team? I mean, maybe even run up the score a little bit. And if you can't run up the score, that's really going to tell you what your floor and ceiling is going to be. I think it was garbage time, so please take it with a grain of salt. You saw Davis Warren play with a little bit of I'm grasping at straws, so please, everybody's like, of course he's trying to be positive, he's a Michigan fan. No, that was a miserable game to watch. But he threw across his body, he rolled out, he completed a few nice passes, and the Samaj Morgan touchdown was a plus in a very negative situation. To your point of rebuild versus retool, two things. I think a lot of us were expecting, because Sherrone Moore was in the Jim Harbaugh tree, that this was just going to go on without a hitch and there wasn't going to be any growing pains. That's not true. Jim Harbaugh came here, regardless of what you think about him, he came here and it was an immediate facelift to a program that was reeling. They rattled off double-digit wins from a year where they had 7 the year before, and they looked like a completely different team. That's elite coaching, and that's elite culture. That's what Jim Harbaugh brought. But number two, last time Michigan took a punch in the face, they played pretty well, and they did some pretty incredible things. And I would hope that Michigan could respond. But what is the thing that's preventing them from being an Ohio State? Ohio State went from Jim Tressel to Urban Meyer to Ryan Day, and they've been roughly the same team outside of the national championship. And, you know, Michigan has now matched them in the past decade. That's not a dig. That's just a fact. Why can't Michigan do that? And I think we're still looking for that answer.
I think the answer is recruiting. I don't know why their recruiting has been second to Ohio State in decades past. I think now you can pretty easily chalk it up to NIL. I think in the past it was facilities, right? Like Michigan just got a locker room upgrade, a much needed one this past summer, that their locker room looked atrocious compared to a lot of other people for years. But outside of recruiting, back to the game and this season. So let's talk about it. What is the ceiling and the floor for Michigan now, record-wise? And then do we think they're a playoff team? So I'm just going to rattle off their rest of their schedule really quick. They have Arkansas State next week. USC comes to Ann Arbor the week after that. That game looks a heck of a lot more interesting now than it did before the year started. Minnesota, Washington, Illinois. Illinois just upset Kansas. Michigan State, Oregon, Indiana, Northwestern, and Ohio State the rest of this year. So they're sitting at 1-1 with those 10 games remaining. Definitely the toughest one is Ohio State. Next is probably Oregon. And then you've got USC. But you have a couple of sneaky, tricky teams in here too. Like Indiana has played really well. You've got Michigan State. Obviously, that's a rivalry game. Anything can happen. You go on the road to Illinois the week before you play Michigan State. So, and maybe I'm overreacting saying that Illinois and Indiana have a shot there, but this Michigan offense looks dreadful. Like it's really, really bad. I think from an offensive perspective, everything should be on the table in terms of personnel changes. Everything should be on the table. But rest of the season, before the season started, I would have said Michigan's floor was 9-3. I think their floor right now, I think it could be 8-4. I would be really, really disappointed with an 8-4. But I think if this offense doesn't improve at all, that's very realistic. And if you had to, if I had to put money on it right now, if Michigan is a playoff team, I think I would say no.
I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. I'm not concerned about the defense just because of the talent that's there. I mean, you have a potential top 15. Kenneth Grant, I don't really know what you'd put it. You have two top 10 talents on the defensive side of the ball. And I would think that you'd be able to figure that out, and that's going to keep you in some games. So stack that up against a Northwestern, an Indiana, until they can prove that they can beat up on somebody that isn't a high school JV team, and Illinois. I refuse to believe that Michigan is going to lose to Illinois. And that's me putting on my Ray-Ban sunglasses with the recording camera.
You hate Illinois.
I can't stand Illinois. I can't stand them. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe. I'm going to get there and I'm going to be booed because everybody knows that I hate Illinois. So I think the defense is going to bounce back. Yeah, the offense, everything should be on the table. This will be a measuring stick, Arkansas State. And if Warren comes out flat, throw in Jaden in the second half. There's been some reports or conflicting reports saying that he isn't an option, or actually they were talking about it for the second half of the Texas game. You know, okay, if he's an option, Warren's a senior, Orgy's a senior, and if he can't win this year, he's not gonna be that. Or even Jack Tuttle. Like, I know the guy is, he didn't win the quarterback competition, but he's a 15th year senior. You're going to tell me that that guy doesn't know how to play the quarterback position?
Just use Jack Tuttle against Indiana and let it be his Indiana revenge game and let him throw for 300.
But seriously, if you're talking about pushing the ball down the field and maybe they see something in Warren that he just needs to get confident, I have no idea. And I think that's the problem. Nobody has any idea what this offense is going to be. So it's frustrating. It's frustrating. You don't really know what to see. I think given the talent on the defensive side of the ball, I don't even want to say a floor or a ceiling. 8-4 is probably realistic and your sweet spot, which is incredibly disappointing. Now, say that with a grain of salt, Oregon hasn't looked impressive. And that's been at games at home. They got to come to the Big House for the first time since 2007, I think. So let's see what happens there. Michigan State is prone to mistakes due to an inexperienced yet talented quarterback, and prone to mistakes with Will Johnson and the defense that has some stars. I like that matchup. And then hopefully you figure out something through Ohio State and maybe that they psych themselves out and you get them on a bad week or something like that. So there is a path if you're trying to be positive, but if you're really, really going to have a gun to my head, I think, again, we're in agreement. 8-4 is probably what you're looking at.
Yep. It's unfortunate given what the thought was behind Michigan and what all of our predictions were behind Michigan before the season started. We all haven't had them in the playoffs. So we will see what this looks like going forward. I think you're right. Arkansas State needs to be a confidence builder game for the offense. And then USC is your next test. You still get them at home. That's going to tell us a lot about the character of this team and how they bounce back from a game like this. Last thing about Michigan, Texas. Just wanted to give a big round of applause and a big congrats out there to all the Michigan State fans. You all were just so excited this last weekend for this Michigan loss. I think this was the happiest I think I've seen Michigan State fans on Twitter since they won the Rose Bowl over 10 years ago. I was so happy for them that they got to experience a little bit of joy on a college football Saturday that they typically don't. So kudos to you guys. I'm glad you've all finally had something to talk about on Twitter other than your crappy football program. So kudos to you.
You are so petty, but you're forgetting about another group.
Ohio State fans, I'm fine with. Ohio State fans, I'm fine with, because they were trolling us, but that what they were doing was like typical like rivalry trolling. Like, and Ohio State is good at football. Michigan State hasn't had anything to talk about for the better part of 2 years now. They suck, and they know they suck, and that's why they're not Michigan State fans. Okay, they're not Michigan State fans. They are fans of whoever is playing Michigan on any given week. And it's so painfully obvious. And they're all just trolls. They are all trolls, and I cannot wait. Oh my gosh. The Michigan-Michigan State game this year, I am psyched, and I hope we pound them into the dirt. And I think, Corey, we've talked about this before. I view Ohio State as the bigger rival, but I think deep down in my soul, I hate Michigan State. I hate both of them, but I might hate Michigan State even more. They try to throw off this little brother title, and then something like this weekend happens, and all you see scrolling on their accounts, nothing but tweets about Michigan, nothing but tweets about Michigan. You are in our rearview mirror. We shut you out last year without Connor Stallions on the sideline. You think we needed your signs to beat you 49-0? You fielded a high school football team last year. You all wouldn't know a good football team if it freaking hit you in the face because you haven't seen one in a decade. God, you are the worst fans ever and the dumbest ones on Twitter, I swear.
Alex, they're going to come for you.
Come for me. With what?
They're going to come for you.
With what? The fact that Michigan got blown out by a great Texas team? You got me, guys. You got
They're going to come for you. They're going to come for you, Alex.
Congrats on your win against FAU.
The trolls. Oh, don't forget Maryland. I think that was a little bit impressive. Nobody beats Maryland in September, I guess, except Maryland and Michigan State.
I was going to say no one beats Maryland except Maryland, and we'll get into that. But I just wanted to throw that out there. Congratulations, Michigan State. I'm glad we gave you something to cheer about.
I want to talk about this because I said something similar like this a couple of years ago on this podcast. And I think when the rivalry was closer with Michigan and Michigan State, and because everybody was in state, like you met so many Michigan State fans that you just hated, and you didn't interact with many Ohio State fans because you're not in state. I think now over these course of 3 years, like it's shifted, like Ohio State fans are the absolute worst. They're so pretentious. They think they're better than everybody else. And now the playing field is level, but you stole the sign. Brother, you have your former tight end going on into the NFL talking about a play that you had never run before, even one time, that nobody has seen, saying that they stole our signs for the play and they knew exactly what to do. Do you realize how ignorant that sounds?
If you don't know what Corey is talking about, former Ohio State tight end Cade Stover was interviewed in a locker room post-game. I don't know who he plays for, but it was post-game of his NFL debut. And Michigan came up and he was like, yeah, it was insane. Like, we played them and we ran a tight end screen that we had never run ever before. And somehow we ran it and they were all yelling screen, screen, screen. Like, explain that to me, basically. And it's like, if you never ran it before, how would Stallions even steal the sign?
The mental gymnastics is incredible. And take it with a grain of salt. Michigan has been doing mental gymnastics for this entire NOA thing. But at this point, it's like, what are we doing? And the fact that you are talking about this is the same place that Michigan fans were in 10 years ago when Tattoo Gate happened. And it's like, see, the only reason that they won is because they had players getting tattoos. Like, how the turntables. And Michigan at that time was an inferior program. And now everybody's hands are a little bit dirty. And that's a fact. Ohio State's are, by the letter of the law. Michigan's, they got their own issues going on right now.
The only team with clean hands is Michigan State, and you can tell because they suck.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Also, public service announcement. Justin Spiro on Twitter.
He was the main focus of what I just was talking about. He's the leader of that three-ring circus.
Unbearable.
He's the leader of that three-ring circus. If you follow Justin Spiro, I have nothing to say to you. I have nothing to say to you. That man, I have to stop myself from replying to every single tweet that he puts out there. He is, I don't know if there's an intelligent thought behind that man's, behind whatever comes out of his mouth. I mean, it is astounding the things he comes up with and puts on Twitter.
He tweets about Michigan so much that he shows up in my For You page.
That's exactly what happens. He talks way more about Michigan than he does Michigan State. This is what I'm saying. They're not Michigan State fans. They're not Michigan State fans. They throw on whatever jersey of whatever team is playing against Michigan on any given week. Just go, if you don't believe me, go look at Justin Spiro's Twitter feed.
So are we actually going to talk about what they did on the field now, or...
Okay, we can actually, you know what? No, that game wasn't good enough. I have that too far down the list. We're going to talk about what, to be honest, this may have been the best game of the week in the Big Ten, the Iowa-Iowa State game. Now, it was...
How did they lose that game?
I don't know how they lost that game. So Iowa State beats Iowa 20-19 on a last second 54-yard field goal, which for anyone who's played college football, 25. It's not supposed to happen, especially not on the road. And this game was a tale of two halves. Iowa was up 13-0 at half and then got outscored 20-6 in the second half. Cade McNamara put up a really, really bad stat line. He was 13 of 29 for 99 yards, no touchdowns, and two interceptions. Yikes. The Cy-Hawk trophy goes back to Ames, and Iowa, again, I do not know how you lost that game. But, hey, it's worth noting, Kirk Ferentz, 0-1. 0-1 on the season. Whoever was coached last week, 1-0. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I'm just saying.
It probably didn't, but also it probably did because nothing that Iowa does makes any sense. But what a collapse. And really, that's all that you can say. Are we back? Like, is the Iowa quarterback position, the quarterback room, just like cursed from here on out? Like, it doesn't matter who you throw back. Like, because I remember Spencer Petras being sort of kind of good before the absolute fall off a cliff. And then you put in what's his face? I don't even remember his name, but
Deacon Hill.
Deacon Hill. Oh my gosh.
There's an Iowa fan on the Pat McAfee show. I don't know his name. He was calling for Deacon Hill to come back and replace Cade McNamara.
Gosh. But Deacon Hill was literally the worst starting quarterback in all of college football, like at every level. And that's not an exaggeration. And then you get McNamara, who is a Big Ten championship winning quarterback and had played well in some pretty big games. He looks lost out there. And even in their spring practice, he didn't look very good. And that hurts to say because we were like, this is the guy that righted the ship for Michigan in 2021. This is the guy that led them to their first Big Ten championship in 2021. And now you're getting called out for Deacon Hill? What?
Yeah, Cade doesn't look good. Caleb Johnson looks good at running back. Let me pull up his exact numbers in this game. I don't know if he had a stellar game, but he had a freaking stellar game. Caleb Johnson, 25 carries for 187 yards and two touchdowns. He averaged 7.5 yards a carry at a long of 54. That dude is electric. He is a ball carrier in every sense of the word. So I don't know, though. This game, it was a classic rivalry game. It was a fantastic game. But like you said, I don't know how Iowa blows this, especially when their defense was playing so – when was the last time you saw Iowa – give up 20 points and a half to anyone that wasn't like Michigan or Ohio State? Like, that's kind of unheard of for them, especially when they dominated in the first half.
Wasn't it Penn State last year? They gave up like 20 in one half. It was the whiteout game.
Oh, but, you know what? Yeah, Penn State did demolish them last year.
But I mean, it's kind of what I think Michigan will be facing this year. Their defense will keep them into games until there's a talent like there's equal talent, and then it's going to be a struggle. Shout out this game, though, and this is kind of a cop-out, one of the most underrated rivalry games, and we get it really early in the year. And it's always, at least the past 3 years, has been really, really exciting.
I really think this was the best game on the Big Ten slate this week. Like, up there with Duke Northwestern, unfortunately, and Illinois Kansas. Oh my
gosh.
Did you stay up for that?
I went to bed thinking that Northwestern had it in the bag, and I was very, very wrong.
Yeah, Duke Northwestern was a double overtime game, which, well, actually, real quick on that game, I saw a tweet from someone, her name is Jessica Smetana. She tweeted about Duke Northwestern. She said, impressive. Recruiters from over 15 consulting firms will be on site for tonight's Duke versus Northwestern game.
Okay. We have to take a segment like detour, because this reminds me. I saw an exchange this weekend. Cal beat Auburn. Okay. At Auburn. And Cal's Twitter is off the charts. Okay, I don't know if this is appropriate, but I'm going to go for it anyway because this is a joke. It's funny. Okay, so let's take it with a grain of salt. It's the Cal Bear is the weirdest looking thing ever, but it's his logo or his face on the corner of Auburn Stadium. And then it's across Auburn Stadium. It says property of Antifa. And it says you can't win football games anymore because of the woke. And it gets better. Somebody comments under that. I don't know if I should say, I got it. I'm too deep now, but all Auburn students have to go in on Monday to get their new pronouns. And then the step below, it says War Eagle, more like diversity, equity, inclusion, and peace Eagle.
This is from Cal's official Twitter account?
No, this is just the Cal fans.
Cal fans are ruthless. Oh my gosh.
It was an unbelievable exchange on Twitter. And this is what makes the college football season so good. You can just get absolute absurdity. I was dying laughing.
College football fans are just second to none. Second to none. Let's go to the second rivalry game that we had this week. And it went in the Big Ten's favor. Nebraska takes Colorado behind the woodshed, 28-10. We should have seen this coming because it's very easy to beat college football teams when you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. Have you seen this stuff between Dylan Raiola and Patrick Mahomes? You haven't seen any of this?
Yes, I have seen it, which is just the this whole game is absurd for many different reasons. Number one, that stuff, like, this has to be on purpose, correct? It can't not be.
It has to be. He wears, like, same exact accessories, like arm sleeves, same mannerisms. Like, he haircut, the way he walks, everything. Everything is exactly like Patrick Mahomes.
It's kind of weird. But if you play like that, I guess you can kind of do whatever you want. So, more power to you. But number two, this game tells us a lot more about Colorado than it does Nebraska. I don't want to take anything away from Nebraska. Nebraska is impressive. And if we're going off of the Matt Rhule coaching cycle, this is about the time where he picks it up and he just turns the team into a trailblazer. So kudos to Nebraska for just beating the brakes off of somebody. And in previous years, they would keep games close, and they would lose every single one of them. So Nebraska, look forward to this, because this is really cool. You have a true freshman quarterback, and he's lighting the world on fire. Yes, it was against UTEP, and yes, it was against Colorado, but man, get excited, because you deserve a winner, because you've been mediocre for so long. But number two, Colorado has two players. That's it. Colorado is directionless. They have no leadership. I mean, listen to Shedeur Sanders after the game talking about his O-line. That's not very smart. And I think Travis Hunter is incredible. I'm really interested to see what happens when he goes to the NFL. Are they going to try to – I mean, it'll be nuts to play both sides of the ball. But maybe experiment it. We got Shohei Ohtani in Major League Baseball. Let's put Travis Hunter in there if he's got the motor to do so. But this is not a well-coached team. Offensive line's terrible. Defense is terrible. Everything is terrible.
Yeah, to your point about their offensive line being terrible, Colorado, so Nebraska had 6 sacks in this game. This is a mind-blowing stat. You ready for this?
Ready.
Colorado averaged 0.7 yards per carry.
Is that good?
No, not good. Not good at all. So Nebraska's defense is legit. Like, they have a really good defense. But like you said, Colorado's offensive line is non-existent. And Dylan Raiola threw 2 games. We made the Patrick Mahomes comparisons because they're hilarious. And he's not lighting the world on fire in the stat department. But listen to this. For a true freshman starting quarterback through his first 2 games, 73.7% completion percentage, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. That's all you got to do. Right? That's all you got to do. He's acclimating to the game. He's not lighting the world on fire, but he's not turning the ball over, and he's super efficient. Those are 2 very difficult things for a true freshman quarterback to come in and do right away. And through 2 games against inferior opponents, Dylan Raiola has done exactly that. And you can see the talent, right? Like, you can see him
move around the pocket. He's a little bit mobile. You can see the arm angles. Like, you can see the talent. So the fact that Nebraska has this dude for this year and at least 2 years after, there are a lot of things to be excited about in Nebraska. Memorial Stadium was rocking on Saturday. And it's just fun to see Nebraska be exciting. It's just fun. I didn't know because Nebraska was kind of, they were elite before like the two of us really started paying attention to college football. So I really didn't get to see Nebraska in their heyday. Now that I'm seeing this level of juice behind the program, I'm like, whoa, wait a second. This is kind of hype. Like, I love that Nebraska is becoming relevant. So I'm super pumped to watch this team. And let's look at the rest of their schedule. Okay, they have Northern Iowa next week, Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers, Indiana, and then they get into their rough stretch of the season. They play Ohio State, then UCLA, UCLA, then USC, then Wisconsin and Iowa. And when I say tough stretch of their season, I mean 4 out of those 5 games. UCLA is not good, but the 4 of their last 5 are Ohio State, USC, Wisconsin, and Iowa. So we're really going to see at the end of the season what Nebraska's made of. But that's kind of ideal, right? Push all those games to the end of the season. Get better as you go. Play some of these teams that you can build some confidence against. And then let's see what they can pull out at the end of the year. And who knows? They could go into Ohio State with, you know, 1 or no losses, best case scenario. This is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, that could turn out to be a really good game and make Ohio State's quest for a national championship very tough. Because I mean, you look at that schedule at the beginning of the year, and you said about Ohio State, okay, what's their toughest games? It's going to be Oregon and Michigan. Well, Michigan is not holding up their end of the bargain, and Oregon is looking pretty shaky as well. You have an undefeated Nebraska team with a confident freshman quarterback coming in there. I'm not saying that they're going to go into it and go into the horseshoe. That would be pretty unbelievable. But you flipped the schedule into adding another difficult test instead of chalking it up as a W. And that's what you have to deal with in college football. And that's why you play the games.
All right, let's get into a team that escaped by the skin of their teeth, but disappointed for sure in week 2. Penn State beats Bowling Green in a tough one, 34-27. Just seems like there was a huge letdown after that week 1 win with a lot of juice on the road at West Virginia. Their defense looked very slow and lethargic at times, which we haven't seen from a Penn State defense since before Manny Diaz. This was a 3-point football game with 5 minutes left in the game, and Bowling Green had the ball. Like, this was a tight, tight game, and I'm sure Penn State fans were sweating this out until the very end, but not a good look after week 1.
I forgot about Penn State on Ohio State's schedule. So 4 difficult games if you look at it. But I know what happened. James Franklin is a fan of the pod. And he heard all of us saying, hey, maybe Penn State's got this figured out. Drew Aller's looking good. They're looking explosive. They defeated an inferior team, and they looked great doing it. Matt, you know what? Let's buy into the Penn State hype train. And then James Franklin's like, no, we can't have that. We can't have people getting confident in our game. Can't have people saying that we're ready to go, take the next step. Nope, no expectations here. And then let's lay an egg and make our fans have heart palpitations against a MAC school from Ohio.
Yeah, and Bowling Green, I mean, they're not the worst MAC team in the world. They returned a lot of players from last year. And Connor Bazelak is their quarterback, who once upon a time was the quarterback at Indiana. But
And Missouri.
And Missouri, yeah, he started off at Missouri before he came to Indiana. But this was definitely too close for comfort. Drew Aller still looked good, looked confident. I think that's the biggest difference I'm seeing from Drew Aller this year and last year. He's playing with an attitude. He's feeling himself whenever he makes a play, which is something you want to see from the guy.
But I think maybe, and I could be wrong, this could be an overreaction to 1 week, but this could be the what's the word for it? This could be the foreshadowing of what I was concerned about going from Manny Diaz to Tom Allen, a defensive coordinator. Like Manny Diaz, this defense never looked like that under him. Even if they got beat by someone, right? Like when Michigan beat them and ran the ball 32 times in a row in the second half last year, Penn State never looked slow and lethargic or like they lacked effort, but they looked like that this week. So that's something to keep an eye on. Can Tom Allen keep those guys playing or get those guys to consistently play at an elite level that they should be, because they are, and they look like that in week one. So we will see. I think it's hard to get consistency from college kids ever, but Manny Diaz managed to do that. That's something to keep an eye on going forward. Anything else on Penn State? Okay, let's go to the next one. Another team that we've mentioned a couple of times now. Oregon squeaks out another one, 37-34 over Boise State, hit a last-second field goal to win this game. Second game in a row that Oregon has really, really struggled to move the ball on the ground. They averaged 3.1 yards per carry in this one. Their offensive line is an issue. Defense, I'm not super concerned about. Like 34 to Boise State isn't going to make me like question their defense too much. Their defense played well in week one. But the offense I'm really concerned about right now. And to be honest, I just don't know what to make of Oregon at this point. I was so high on them before the year. I almost picked them to win the Big Ten. And now they look... They look like they're putting Ohio State in a it's their conference to lose kind of situation, and Oregon was supposed to be the challenger. They just don't look like that right now.
Boise can ball. If there's anything that game showed you, it's exactly that. Mattson's got the boys fired up, and Ashante, or what's his name?
Let me get it. I don't know how to pronounce it either. It's like Gene T or something?
Whoever he is, he deserves to have his name pronounced correctly, because
the guy who runs a lot, the guy who runs real fast and real far,
that man, scary. He is very scary. That was a dog fight. That game and a track meet, and listen, you can kill the man, but not the idea. The Pac-12 was alive and well. The Pac-12 track meet was you got the ghost of that in that game. It was a story of Oregon was the more talented team, and just eventually had more guns than Boise State did, and was able to take care of business. You're not going to be able to do that throughout the entirety of the year. You got to be able to figure something out. You're not going to be playing in Eugene, Oregon for the rest of this season. But you are completely correct. Not being able to move the ball on the ground is going to kill them, especially in the Big Ten. That was a huge deal. If you become one-dimensional in the Big Ten and it is not running the ball, you are going to lose a game against an incredibly inferior opponent in this conference. I don't care who you are.
Yep, you're 100% right. So we've got to watch closely for what Oregon does in the coming weeks. Now let's look at their schedule, see who they have coming up. Oh, this week's going to be the Civil War against Oregon State, which, again, should be an easy one to handle. Like right now the line is 16. Jonathan Smith kind of took everyone from Oregon State. But we will see. This is going to be their first week on the road. So on the road, rivalry game. Let's see how Oregon can respond. Can they shake the rust off and look like they're supposed to? I think we'll learn a little bit about Oregon this coming week. You good? Okay. Would you like to talk about your beloved Illini? They wore some sick helmets this week.
No, I don't want to talk about them.
But they wore they wore some sick helmets.
Yeah, they wore some sick helmets, and they got a cool thing that they do at the center of their field with the eye and the Illinois shape. I like that stuff because I think it's fun. I hate this team. I can't stand them.
They just beat a talented Kansas team that didn't you pick to win the Big 12?
They can still win the Big 12. That's not a conference loss.
No, I know. I know they can still win the Big 12, but what if Illinois just beat your Big 12 champ?
They did. So does that mean they're going to win the Big 12?
No, but it means Illinois might be good and you might have to accept that.
No, they're not. They're not good. I don't care. They upset a Kansas team that probably overlooked them. They probably are fans of the show. They said, man, this Corey guy, he knows ball because he picked us to win the Big 12. So we don't even need to prepare for Illinois. You got to prepare for everybody, okay? That's how this is going to go. And as much as I've been ripping Brett Bielema, the guy's still a coach that was successful at one point, and you're going to squeak out something that you shouldn't squeak out sometimes. Daniels had 3 interceptions in this game. That's kind of the story. And if you let a team hang around, especially if you're trying to go into their building, that's not good news. So there's upsets that happen in college football all the time, like Notre Dame. Ha ha ha. Let's point and laugh at them for losing to a MAC school from Illinois. Maybe it was just Illinois. It was Illinois' day, right? It was Illinois' weekend. Illinois beats Kansas, ranked team, coming into their building, and then Northern Illinois travels to the cathedral of college football and beats Notre Dame. Sometimes these things happen, okay? I refuse to give Illinois credit.
What if Illinois' secondary is really good like they were a few years ago?
Then Michigan is in trouble, and they'll lose by like 30 points or something like that. I don't know. I hate these guys.
Why do you hate them so much?
Because they're annoying. Well, basketball, they're really annoying.
Oh, basketball, they are super annoying.
So, and that's got to carry over at least a little bit.
Okay, you know? I get it now. I get it now.
Yeah. And I just think that their best shot was that year where they had Chase Brown and all
the Brown brothers.
Was DeVito the quarterback that year?
That's
no,
their name.
I know. Okay. I know what you mean. Dog, this is a professional podcast. I would never make such a joke as such. But isn't that when they had Tommy DeVito as well? Or is that the year that he
I thought he was left at Syracuse.
Oh, it was Altmaier, right? Was that his first year?
Was that Altmaier's first year?
I don't know, but they had all the pieces. They had all the pieces, and Chase Brown stuck the Heisman pose in that game. And it was like, okay, maybe Illinois is going to make some noise, and they couldn't do it. So,
can you hear my dog scratching?
Maybe, but he hates Illinois too.
He also hates Illinois. Barkley, stop. Okay, you ready to move on?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Illinois ever again.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Michigan State instead.
Okay, fine. I'll take the lead on this one, too. Aiden Chiles, kind of electric. That's the one compliment you're going to get out of me. Okay? Congratulations. You beat Maryland. You know what Maryland is? A 6-win team. Every year. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if they start 6-0. Guess what? They're going to finish with 6 wins. That's what you did. Congrats.
Mike Locksley. So you just said Aiden Chiles is electric, which he is. He's the most talented player on their team. I saw a quote from Mike Locksley after the game. He said, "Our plan was to try to force them to beat us throwing the ball, and they did." Really smart decision, forcing them to put the ball in their most talented player's hands.
This league. What kind of response is that? I kind of have a bone to pick with that response. Like, it's like, we're not going to let X player beat us. Okay. So you're just satisfied if another player beats you? Like, you're satisfied if you lose the game another way? The Herm Edwards quote, "You play to win the game, not to prevent losing a game in one way."
Yeah, the direct quote was, "Our goal was to make Chiles beat us throwing the football, and guess what? He did." That was the whole quote from Mike Locksley. Again, that's a decision, choosing to put the ball in the most talented player on the opposing team's hands.
Do Maryland and Minnesota play each other this year?
Oh, God, I hope so. Yes, they do. Oh,
where's that game at?
At Minnesota.
Certified Big Ten sickos bowl right there.
Loser loses their head coach, or does that?
Or no. Loser has to keep their head coach.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
But back to Michigan State. Chiles is electric, but I will say Chiles is a little bit feast or famine. He is not. He's not gun shy at all. I think he threw three interceptions in this game. Yeah, he threw three touchdown passes and threw for 363 yards, but also three interceptions. And two stats that, if you remember, I brought these up after week one as something to keep an eye on, turnovers and penalties for Michigan State. So far, through 2 weeks, they have six turnovers. They are bottom 10 in the country in turnovers right now. They're also bottom 10 in the country in penalties. So in a bad way, like they turn the ball over a lot and get called for a lot of penalties. So this seems like it's going to be an issue long term.
Undisciplined and sloppy, like Justin Spiro on Twitter.
Oh, got him. Got him. But hey, Michigan State went 2-0 this week. So they have a lot to be happy. They were the only team, the only fan base that went 2-0 this week. No one else can say that.
What do you mean?
You know exactly what I mean.
Oh, you mean in the state of Michigan?
No, I mean Michigan lost and Michigan State won. They went 2-0.
I'm stupid.
you are a little bit.
I see.
You are a little bit.
Yeah.
You will notice that we haven't talked about Ohio State yet. It is not because we are Michigan fans. It is because they played Western Michigan and they beat them 56-0. Ohio State is doing what Michigan did last year. They have a super soft beginning to their schedule. So it's like, okay, yeah, I think they're really great. And like deep down, I know they're really great. I just don't know what to pull from these games right now.
Well, Will Howard's looking pretty good and mobile. But you know who also is looking good?
Jeremiah Smith.
You know who also is looking good?
Who?
Kyle McCord. It's looking really good.
Dude, Kyle McCord looks... If I could go back in time, I would just spam tweet every day, like tweeting this until Kyle McCord transfers to Michigan. That's what I would do. Could you imagine the story arc if Kyle McCord was the quarterback in Michigan right now?
I mean, he could do it next year. What's stopping him?
The fact that he's playing really well at Syracuse and they're a pretty good football team.
Yeah, that's fair. And then we have a 5-star waiting in the wings, so...
We do, yeah. But to your point, Will Howard, 18 of 26 for 292, one touchdown, no picks. Quinshon Judkins, 9 carries, 108 rushing yards.
Is that good?
That's pretty good. Average 12 a carry with 2 touchdowns. Travion Henderson also had 2 touchdowns on the ground. He had 10 carries for 66 yards. Let's see what Jeremiah Smith did. The true freshman. Remember the true freshman? Like the true freshman who's only played 2 games of college football, that true freshman? 5 receptions, 119 yards, and 1 touchdown.
I could do better.
You and Jeremiah Smith should race.
Honestly, I think I'm faster.
I think you'd win.
Yeah. Has he got calves like mine? Probably not.
Bro, yeah, you guys don't know. Corey has some massive calves. He's got those fast twitch muscles.
It's the only reason I was able to play college baseball.
It's because they took one look at his calves and said, get this man a uniform.
This guy can play.
Get this man a uniform.
And then they saw me play and they're like, oh, maybe not.
Julian Sayin got in the game too, the 5-star recruit that transferred from Alabama. He went 2 for 2 for 61 yards and a touchdown. So he got his first touchdown pass as a Buckeye. Again, they all look great and we know they're all great. It's just, it was against Western, and then last week it was against Akron. So I just want to see it against someone else so we can actually spend some time like going into the game on these guys. Probably won't be for another week because they play Marshall next week. Then after that, they play Michigan State on the road in East Lansing. At least that's a Big Ten game. We'll actually be able to maybe draw something from that one, I hope, and it will probably be that Ohio State's really freaking good, and Michigan State is not. Anything to add? Okay. Indiana beats Western Illinois 77-3. Indiana just set a record for points scored in a game and offensive yards in a game.
Yeah, it was impressive, but it was against St. Mary's School for the Blind.
Okay, yeah, but this is Indiana, Corey. Like,
this is true. You know what? Good for them.
Yes, thank you.
I think Kurt Cignetti is.
I think it's Cignetti. I think.
I don't know. Well, I mean, tell you what, he's probably ripping cigs on the sideline because they were just torching those boys.
Good one. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Good for Indiana. It's good to see them play some competent football, even though it was against two teams that were not really sure where they are in the FCS like landscape.
100%. But any win for Indiana is a good win, and he's already setting school records. Like, I like this. And they were talking about it. I watched the beginning of this game. They were talking about it on the broadcast. Like, they were talking to Kurt during the week, and his message to Indiana all week to his players was, the standard is the standard. Like, we are playing to a standard that we set for ourselves. We are not playing against Western Illinois this week. Like, we are playing against the Indiana standard of football. And I love that message because those kids in that locker room playing for Indiana probably need to hear that. Like, people don't talk about Indiana football. So the fact that he's like, put some respect on our name. I love that he's saying that to the players. So also, I just want Indiana to flip that 5-star quarterback from USC. I don't know his name, but have you seen him? He's taken a visit to Indiana, and there's actually a decent chance that Indiana like lands this 5-star quarterback in the next class.
That would be crazy. When was the last time they got a 5-star anything? Was Tevin Coleman a 5-star?
I don't know if Tevin Coleman was a 5-star. I always forget he played at Indiana. He was a monster.
Yeah, he was a freak. That guy could run the ball.
Yeah, freak. Another big blowout this week. USC beats Utah State 48-0.
Yeah. What do you want me to say? Utah State put up a good fight. I mean, USC avoided the Vegas hangover.
They did. That's true. Miller Moss, 229 and a touchdown. Woody Marks, 103 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Where was that wide receiver? Oh, frick. Kyron Hudson, the guy with those circus catches, only had one for 16 yards. That's a bummer.
Sad.
That is sad. But, hey, USC got a shutout. I meant to Google this before the show. I wonder what the last time a Lincoln Riley coach team pitched a shutout was.
Middle school? I don't know.
Right? Like, it had to be forever ago.
No, I mean, like, when Lincoln Riley played middle school football.
Not when he coached middle school football. When he was actually playing middle school football.
Correct. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I think the fact that they pitched a shutout, even if it's freaking Utah State. Let's go, USC. You're playing Pac-12 and Big Ten football at the same time, and that's the perfect combination of football. Unless you're on the bad end, where you don't score any points, and the other opponent also scores a bunch of points.
The dark side of Big Ten football and Pac-12 football. You don't score, and the scoreboard just keeps ticking up.
There are two sides to this coin, and USC was on the right side of it this week. Oh, goodness. Okay, Duke Northwestern, we touched on for a little bit. Duke beats Northwestern in double overtime, 26-20. There was a graphic they put up in the second half of this game. The first five possessions of the second half were a blocked punt, missed field goal, an interception, a fumble, and a field goal.
Dude, say that and say, heck yeah, brother. That's what I'm talking about. That stadium layout right now is causing some issues. There's a lot of wind that's gusting into that little soccer dome football field. But I really want to go. Like, I wish really bad that Michigan was playing at Northwestern this year because,
Yeah, you have to go.
So much fun.
You have to go to a game there this year. You have to.
the Sickos Committee podcast was talking about, like, if somehow, some way, obviously it's the Sickos, so it's not going to happen. But if Northwestern makes the playoff, where do they host the game?
Oh,
is it at Wrigley Field, or is it at that stadium?
It has to be at that stadium. Oh, it has to be. That would be absolutely electric. Okay, we're going to rip through these the rest of these pretty quick. Washington beats Eastern Michigan 30-9. Excuse me, Wisconsin beats South Dakota 27-13. Just got to say, I'm out on Wisconsin. I said this on last week's pod. I don't know. Feels like Wisconsin and Luke Fickell are a little bit lost right now. I don't like the dairy raid here. Maybe this is just taking a long time to gel, and it's going to take into year three, but I don't like it. I'm out on Wisconsin all this year. I will always, always, always pick Wisconsin's opponent to cover. No matter what the spread is, I am always going to pick Wisconsin's opponent. Rutgers beats Akron 49-17.
Yeah, good job.
Big win for them. Ethan Calligmanis threw for, hold on, I'm going to pull this up so I'm not wrong. I believe it was three touchdowns.
Three tuds?
He had three touchdowns.
From Mount Kilimanjaro?
Yep, three touchdowns. He did it in back-to-back games too. Which is like, wow, the first time in a long time for Rutgers. I saw a tweet somewhere that said it.
But probably the first time since the birth of football.
Got him. But they didn't even throw the forward pass back then. So it had to be a little more recent.
Okay.
And then Minnesota, the boat was rowed on Rhode Island. They beat Rhode Island 48-0. That was pretty good. I just came up with that on the spot.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. All right. That is our week two review. Should we include the picks on this episode, or should we stop recording and do a new episode?
Let's just do the rapid fire. Why not?
Oh, I love that so much. I was hoping you would say that. Okay. Give you guys an update on where we stand through week two. The week two picks, I led the way.
Do we have to give him an update?
Yes, we do have to give him an update. I absolutely have to give him an update. So Ethan and Corey did forget to pick a game this week where a line didn't come out until later. So this is why the numbers are a little bit off, but we'll make up for it this week. In week two, I went 8-7. Ethan went 7-7. And Corey went 6-8. Wah, wah.
Hey, shut up.
And now here are the records through the first 2 weeks. I am 21-15. Ethan is 20-15, and Corey is 18-17. Wah, wah.
Hey, shut up.
You might want to revert back to the coin, Corey, before this gets out of hand.
No, I'm never going back. As a champion of the picks, I'm never going back. Not once, not never.
Okay, do you want to be the one who gives me the spreads here?
Or do you? Yes, I can. Are we picking big games? Should I pick the games?
We're only going to do one big game, and it's only going to be for you and Ethan, and I'm picking it. So I have to actually look through the schedule right now.
Okay, well, you do that, and I will give you the matchups. A little bit out of order, just because of where I have my settings, but we have a fairly full slate and a couple of intriguing games as well. So the first game up at Saturday. No Friday games this week for the Big Ten. Saturday, Arkansas State travels to Michigan, where the line is Michigan minus 23.5. I'll start. I think Michigan has to cover this number for the sake of the fan base. And now we got 2 weeks in, I think maybe the line will be over-adjusted because of just the two performances. And things are going to have to get better, because if they don't cover this spread against this team, the panic button, which has kind of already been pressed, they might have to get a new button. So I'll have Michigan covering 23.
I will also, do you say 23 or 23.5?
23.5.
Okay. Yeah, I will have Michigan covering as well. This is like we said, it's a confidence builder game. So I think they're going to try to run the score up a little bit just to do that. And I also wouldn't be shocked with a defensive touchdown. So give me Michigan minus 23.5.
All right, a big one. SEC Big Ten clash. Let's see if it works out better for the Big Ten. Probably not, because Alabama travels to Wisconsin, where the spread is minus 16 in Alabama's favor.
Give me Bama. It's no-brainer. I think this is way too big a number. Or sorry,
Bama
sorry, not big enough of a number.
What Bama shows up is the real question, but I think this will just be a fun game to see Alabama travel so far north. And I'm really excited as far as like the non-conference games in the future, but that's fluff, and you don't come here for fluff. You come here for analysis. Wisconsin bad, Bama good, Alabama covers the spread. Next game, also at 12 on Peacock, Central Michigan travels to Illinois. You know what? This is really, if Illinois doesn't win by 21 points, I'm blowing up on this podcast next week. So do it. Win by 21, Illinois. They're going
to
cover.
You're picking Illinois.
Well, I got to now. They're like, oh, we beat Kansas, Corey.
Did they say that to you?
Yeah, they've been sending me nasty DMs all morning.
The official Illinois Twitter account. boring pick so far. I am also going with Illinois. So, Corey, you and I are in sync for these first three games, which has not made me feel good. But I will also go Illinois minus 20.
Okay, next game. The Civil War, which I think is the earliest it's been played in probably like 50 years.
I'm taking the North.
History jokes. Not that type of Civil War. This game is at 3:30 on Saturday. Oregon travels to Oregon State, where the spread is Oregon minus 16. Alex, give me your thoughts.
This is tricky. I still don't know, or I should say I'm still banking on Oregon looking better as the season goes on, but they're going on the road for the first time. This is a rivalry game, and I haven't seen it yet, so I'm not going to bet on it yet. I'm going to take Oregon State plus 16.
If Ethan were on the podcast with us today, he would be saying things like, Vegas is begging you to take Oregon State because of the struggles of Oregon, and this number is too large for the way Oregon has been playing. But this is just one of those things where, based off of what I've seen, you're telling me Oregon keeping it close to Idaho and Boise State at home. Now they have to go on the road in a rivalry game against a team that is probably pissed off that they left the conference and is ruining this little matchup that they have. That's a tough sell for me. I'm going to take Oregon State to cover this number. And I don't know how good I feel about it.
We have had the same picks every single game so far.
Yep. I hate you. So that's what I have to say about that.
Well, okay.
Here's a really interesting game. 3:30 in West Lafayette. Notre Dame travels to Purdue, where the spread is minus 10. Before I get started, Alex, Notre Dame is one of, I think, five teams that has yet to throw a passing touchdown this season. Which is a absolutely crazy statistic. And Purdue played week one and did not play week two. And so they're 1-0. I don't know what to do with this number.
It is weird, bro. It is weird. But because it's weird, I'm taking the weird team. And the weird team is Purdue.
Alex, why'd you do this to me? Give me Notre Dame.
Boiler up. I know.
I want to pick them so bad. Maybe I will. No line for Prairie View, Michigan State. You know what I say about that? But we do have a line for Nevada and Minnesota, at 3:30 kick in Minnesota. Minnesota is a 16.5 point favorite. I don't know how good Nevada is. I don't know how good Minnesota is. 16.5, I'm taking Nevada because PJ Fleck exists.
I feel like this is the perfect spot for us to take Nevada and then Minnesota blows the doors off someone again, just like they did last week. So because I don't believe in Minnesota, I'm taking Minnesota.
Our logic in these picks has been like, we've been, oh, like you should take this number because they're begging you. You should go against it. Nope, I'm not going to do it. I don't care what they have to say. Golly, we're a bunch of degenerates, aren't we? Okay, Troy travels to Iowa, where Iowa's minus 22. And the total, here we are. Here we are again, Alex, at 4 o'clock. The total is 38.5, and Iowa is a 22-point favorite. Troy is 0-2, and they have lost to Nevada, 28-26, and Memphis, 38-17. I'm not.
You have
I'm not taking Iowa. I can't do it. I can't. No. Alex, don't make me do it.
What are you?
I don't want to. I can't. I'm taking Nevada. I don't.
They're not playing Nevada.
No. See, that's why I don't want to do it. I take Troy. Take Troy. And I feel like a sicko.
I'm also taking Troy. I think I was going I think I was going to have a little hangover from that heartbreaking loss last week.
This is just, Alex, this isn't fun anymore. I don't like this. I don't want to do this. Okay, no line for Northern Iowa, Nebraska. Nebraska, 23rd ranked team in the country. Cool stuff. This is a fun game. Indiana travels to UCLA for a 7:30 kick. IU, a road favorite against UCLA. 3 points. I'm giving you the honors of starting with you, this one.
You dog. This is the game I was most confused about looking at the slate. Indiana's traveling to the West Coast. UCLA also didn't play in week two. So they've had a week of prep. But you know what? I don't think either team is all that talented. Just stars wise, and I'm going to give a big coaching edge to Indiana. So I'm going to take IU on the road minus 3.
These lines are gross. Insane. Why did you pick these right now?
Insane.
This is disgusting. I'm going simply off of UCLA. This is their first home game, and this might be their only home game where it's like, okay, we might win this game. Outside of, I think they play a cupcake in there somewhere. Give me UCLA. Gross. Give me UCLA.
Did we miss the Apple Cup, or are you saving that for last?
I think I'm saving that for last. Maybe I skipped it, but
okay. All right, we'll save it for last.
I did skip the Apple Cup. Yeah, wow, I'm a big dumb idiot. 3:30 kick, Apple Cup. Washington State travels to Washington. Home game for Washington. Washington is 4.5 point favorite. Give me Washington State. They've been playing hot, and I think they'll be pissed off. But Washington's been playing good, too. They just haven't played a team with a pulse yet.
Yeah, I'm going to take Washington. That's it.
Okay, we're at odds. So, hate you.
Hate you still. Too. Hate you too.
Eastern Illinois, Northwestern doesn't have a line yet. And 8 o'clock game on the ACC network, an old time ACC matchup, but not anymore because we unfortunately have Maryland in the Big Ten. Maryland goes to Virginia, where Maryland is a 2.5 point favorite. I started the last one, so Alex, you get to pick this game first.
I'm taking Virginia. I just don't trust Maryland against I don't trust Maryland against most teams, but especially these like middle of the road, like could be good, could be bad teams. Maryland is that team. So they're going on the road here. I just don't trust them enough.
I have a buddy. His name is Matt Carpenter. Shout out, Matt, if you're listening to the podcast. Matt Carpenter looks exactly like Billy Edwards Jr. So for that reason, I'm taking Maryland.
I love that for you. Okay. We picked all the Big Ten games that there are lines for. So now it's time for me to give you and Ethan your extra game to pick this week. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
I thought about giving you guys a fun one. I thought about Arizona, Kansas State. Kansas State -7.5 at home because Ethan has Arizona in the college football playoff and I have Kansas State. But I am going to give you something way more disgusting than that. I am going to give you LSU going on the road to South Carolina. LSU is -7.
Easy. Give me Beamer ball, baby.
Oh, easy? Okay. Okay.
Easy. I think maybe this might have a chance to be a track meet. I'm just slinging the pigskin. Yeah, this will be fun. You give me a disgusting line. You know it was a disgusting line? UCLA, Indiana. That was a disgusting line. You know it was a disgusting line? You're having me pick Iowa again? Are you serious? Any Iowa game. We've been sitting here. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of this crap. These lines for this week, week three, the Big Ten, might be the most disgusting, horrific things to look at. And we have to expose this to the children. This is what we're doing. This is a family-friendly podcast.
Yeah, we should go through games that your children shouldn't watch this week.
And it's just the entirety of the Big Ten Week 3 slate.
Nevada at Minnesota, do not let your kids watch. Troy at Iowa, don't let your kids watch. Indiana at UCLA, God, do for the love of God, do not let your kids watch that game. I think those are the three big ones.
Sick. Absolutely sick.
I'm going to watch all three of them beginning to end.
Yeah, you're probably right. Because we're sick and twisted. We are sick in the head.
Yeah, we are. Okay, buddy. You good?
I'm so good. I'm so good. I'm bad, baby.
That was disgusting. If you have stuck with us to the end of this one, thank you. We will get Ethan's picks. I don't know if we'll post them or anything because it's not like he's any good at this anyways. Boom, roasted. But
that guy sucks.
But we will get his picks to keep track of the standings for the season. So remember, subscribe wherever you're listening on Apple or Spotify. Follow us on Twitter, B1G Banter Pod, Instagram, B1G Banter. And we will talk to you all next week. Have a good Saturday.